Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, inside lacrosse analyst, and my old buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, we're finally into week one of the college lacrosse season, and we have a great show on tap, including an interview with new Syracuse Orange head men's lacrosse coach, Gary Gate. Lots to talk about. So, Dixie, let's get it. What's going on, Dix? What do you think of the first week of the college lacrosse season?
It was entertaining. I don't know if, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of drama, but first of all, it was great to have lacrosse back. And last weekend was pretty cold on Saturday. Sunday was cold too, but it's so misleading. I was watching the Hopkins-Jacksonville game, and it's a bright, sunny day. And kids, look, when I played, we'd layer up. I mean, they're guys who used to wear turtlenecks underneath of their uniforms. I mean, you can remember, you know, Todd Cavalera roll dodging his way to the goal in a white turtleneck.
In a smart turtleneck.
Yeah. Yeah. And now these guys wear like nothing under and you're like, oh, it's sunny out there. And look, and you know, obviously when the camera goes to the stands, you can see everybody dressed, you know, like Cornelius Jack or UConn Cornelius, I should say. But the players, you're watching them, it's sunny and you're like, oh, maybe it's not that bad. You know, then at halftime, you go out to get the mail or take the dog out or whatever. You're like, oh my God, yeah. This is awful. Well,
two things about that. First of all, they make cold gear, any kind of stuff that goes under your way better than they did. In fact, they didn't make it before. You had to wear like a turtleneck or long johns, which were not meant for performance apparel.
It doesn't wick the sweat away.
Yeah,
it traps much better it, now. And then you are just bogged down by a cold, wet shirt.
Yes, exactly. So that's the first thing. But on the other side of that, did you ever play a game in February? I thought the Hopkins season would start in like March.
We always started first weekend in March. But I mean, granted, I played, it's going on 28 years ago now. So no, never played in February.
But the season ends the same weekend, always right. On Memorial Day, but now it starts 1 month sooner. So that is definitely a change. And look, as for fans, I'm not opposed to this. I don't have to sit outside. There's plenty of games that were on streaming or on TV last week, so I was able to sit in my comfortable living room and watch the Jays.
It's a treat.
So I
got two things real quick. One, you mentioned the cold gear and the apparel technology. Our cold gear used to be those thick gray champion t-shirts. Dude, didn't we think they were the best? And I still have a bunch.
I still have some that I wear.
They're durable, like, man. They still last, but they were our cold gear back then, and we loved it, you know. And then you after the game or after practice, you know, you take your pads off in the locker room, and it's just, you know, it was a light gray, and then it's dark gray from all the sweat, and I guess you just didn't realize like how cold we were. I mean, we were freezing. But that was typically underneath the turtleneck, which was underneath the sweatshirt, which was, you know, all the stuff that we used to wear. Second thing I'd like to say, how do I put this? Because I don't want to come off as a complete jerk, but the streaming of lacrosse games, okay? I understand the quality of them is not up to network standard for a lot of them, but these are student productions. A lot of them cost, what, $30, $40 a year? You have the ESPN app, BTN Plus. Can people stop whining about this stuff? I understand it's not optimal, but would you rather have nothing? You know, the places like Penn State that played indoors, Michigan played indoors. Do you think the parents that couldn't make the travel would like to have had anything to watch their kids play, or a faithful alum would have liked anything just to see the team play? Again, it's not optimal, but man, I've had this conversation with people throughout the week. Like, Lax Twitter has just gotten so toxic and so negative about minutia, in my opinion. I sent out a tweet earlier today as we're recording this. I'm seeing things this week, you know, as it's been announced that Loyola, Maryland, we're going to be on Big Ten Network, Joe Beninati and I, noon this Saturday. Can't wait. And most of the people are like, oh, this is great news. Can't wait to watch the game. Weather's supposed to be good. But there's other people like, yeah, but is BTN going to have that moonshot one camera show? Hey, since 2015, genius, we've been at midfield, lower level shooting every single game at the University of Maryland, with the exception of the 2015 Big Ten final. We put it up in Tizer Tower because there was a monsoon. Every game since 2015 at the University of Maryland that's been on the Big Ten Network has been shot at the midfield level. Open your eyes. It's so frustrating. It's just so frustrating to see stuff like that. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. I'm normally not like this, Dan Flynn, especially when we have a great weekend on tap, coming off of a weekend where we got experience. But man, sometimes lacrosse fans, you are way too high maintenance.
Well, I'm never one to stop you when you're on a rant, but I will, and I'm going to agree with you on this one. It's the first week of the season, week zero, not even like the first real week. There's college basketball being played, right? Lots of exciting college basketball games.
Like 150 on television.
Right, and it's always had to compete where lacrosse doesn't even get on until April in years past, right? Like 10 years ago. So now you get games, quality games on TV or streaming or whatever, available to you in your living room in February. Take what you can get. It should have been like a celebration of spring coming, of a new season. I just watched the games and was just thankful that I could see them. And I feel like that's the attitude people should take. And I think we should be more positive about it. And I agree. Like I be honest with you, was very pleasantly surprised when I turned on the Hopkins-Jacksonville game and heard Chris Cotter and Quinn Kesnick calling the game. I didn't know what team was going to do it. I thought it was actually going to be like some type of internal Hopkins production, and I didn't care. I just wanted to see the team play and to be able to have that quality of a broadcast streaming. I was like pretty pumped.
And listen, the Maryland High Point game. Okay, is that angle shot from the top of the tower the best for lacrosse? No, it's not. But you got two students busting their butts, really working hard to do the best they can, play-by-play analysis. And I thought they were pretty good for students. And guess what, people? The students are the ones producing the game. They're shooting it. They're directing it. They're producing. I mean, good gravy. I mean, let's stop. Let's just stop with the whining and the moaning. You have a choice. If it's that bad and you don't like it, don't pay for it. Don't pay for it. Don't get it. Don't watch it. Simple as that.
Or go in person, you know?
Hey, there you
go. Get off your couch, put on the parka and the turtleneck and the champion sweatshirt and get out to the game and stop whining. Go drive for 4 hours if you don't live near your favorite team or your team's on the road. Go drive to a game or get on a plane and go do it. Or you can sit in your living room, comfy living room, and watch the games.
Yeah. The points you make are great, though. I didn't even really think of that piece until you verbalized it. Yeah. Lacrosse, and not only lacrosse, but like, I don't know how many games were streamed last week, you know,
a bunch,
at least a half dozen, maybe closer to a dozen.
They almost all were available for you to watch.
Right.
Yeah. And there'll be more this week. So good Dixie rant to get us going. Oh, Dix, that's tremendous. So the Jays themselves, it was fun. Good to see them out there. I hope that Jacksonville is better than I thought they were. Two really interesting games coming up for Hopkins this weekend. We'll see what they're made of and how the team is improving.
Yeah. So, you know, Jacksonville Hopkins, I like the Hopkins defense. The goaltending, I think, you know, I'm surprised that Kearson started. Marcille was the one that kind of brought it home last year. But we'll see how that one unfolds. The one thing if you watch the Hopkins offense, it's really curious. The ball doesn't seem to get down to that left lower attack spot very much for scoring opportunities. And no matter who is in the game personnel wise. And we saw this last year, you know, Brendan Grimes, a really talented player from the Baltimore area, you know, quote unquote struggle as an attackman last season. I just don't think he got a lot of opportunities down there to finish. move him to midfield, and all of a sudden, you know, second half of the season, he comes to life and plays very well. And so we split time between midfield and attack this past weekend. But it's really interesting, like that lower left attack spot just doesn't seem to, you know, it's not, I don't think it's a personnel issue. I think it's kind of a execution or strategy issue, but we'll see how that plays out. Jacksonville, very athletic, hung with the Jays. But let's remember too, folks, it's February 5th. This is early to have lacrosse games. Hopkins had one scrimmage, but you mentioned it. We'll talk about it later. I mean, a double dip. Holy smokes. On the road at Towson, which is a short drive, obviously. Then, you know, then you head down to D.C. to take on a Georgetown team that everybody has in their top five preseason. So tough weekend on tap for the Jays.
Well, this is the Inside Lacrosse Weekend Preview Show, Dixie. So let's get right into the game previews. There's 34 games on the schedule. Lots of interesting matchups, including two top 20 matchups. One, you've mentioned both of them, Maryland and Loyola on Saturday, Hopkins and Georgetown will tangle on Sunday. And a bunch of teams getting out on the field for the first time this season in what we're now calling week one, officially right. Week one of the college lacrosse season. So let's start this. On Friday, there are four games on tap on Friday. Let's talk about two in particular. The first game features Richmond, who will travel down to face number 6, North Carolina. That game is at 5:00, and it's available on the ACC network for fans to watch.
Yeah, Richmond, a lot of high hopes. They've had some good scrimmages leading up to their season opener. They've got a really nice face-off, man. Jared Chinoy is a freshman out of Florida. Played some club ball up in for the Crabs. Played with my older son Matt, as a matter of fact, and he's impressive. He's doing a nice job right now. You know, offensively, Ryan Lanchberry. They've got Ryan Dunn that can score goals. They're playing against a Carolina team that we talked about it last week. They got replaced a lot of pieces in the midfield. They've got a big defense, but they've got some new faces there as well. Paul Barton, a freshman, could start for North Carolina. Max Cooney, really big, really big defender, sophomore. Colin Krieg, though, second year in the Nets, I think he's going to be better. This will be a really entertaining game and a real, it could be a barometer game for both of these teams to kick off the 2022 season. ACC Network Friday evening, this game will be on.
Yep. Happy hour lacrosse. Friday afternoon. Another game at 6:00. This game will be on Lax Sports Network, and it's number 19, Johns Hopkins, who's 1-0. We'll travel up Charles Street, face the Towson Tigers at 6:00. Again, that's on LSN.
And a Towson team kicking off their campaign, first game of the year. Sean Nadelin taking on Peter Milliman. Nadelin's name was mentioned quite a bit as a possible candidate for that Johns Hopkins head coaching job. They had played Lehigh last weekend in a scrimmage. I think they did pretty well against the Mountain Hawks. Andrew Milani is an attackman who's very, very talented. They've got some transfers in from the University of Maryland that are having an impact. So this is a Towson team that's hungry and they want to get out there and prove. A little bit of a down year last year, slow start. They want to get off to a better start this year. I want to say, I have to go back and look at the series history, but I feel like Hopkins has really struggled at Towson over the last 6 years or so. That would be like the last three games that they've played at Johnny Unitas. So stiff test for the Blue Jays. And as we mentioned, the first of a double dip this weekend, a Friday-Sunday combo against the Tigers and then down in D.C. against the Hoyas.
Moving on to Saturday, Dix. This is where the meat of the games are. There's 26 games on the schedule for Saturday, and it starts at noon. Big Ten Network, number 8 Loyola at number 2 Maryland in our first top 10 matchup of the season.
Yeah, really looking forward to this one. Myself, Joe Beninati, will be on the call. Big Ten Network from the middle concourse at midfield at Maryland Stadium. Excited for this for many reasons. One, personally, for me, this is exciting. It's my son, my older son, Matt, first college game for the Hounds. You know, this is a Loyola team that returns the entire lineup virtually intact when you look at Loyola, yeah, they were one clear away from beating Duke in the quarterfinals last year and going to championship weekend. But you have to also remember, this was a team that was 5-5 in the middle of April, in danger of missing the Patriot League tournament. So which one of those teams is going to be the 2022 version? And I know Coach Toomey and his staff are working really, really hard to see that. Maryland, impressive opening season victory against High Point last weekend. Logan Wisnowskis was terrific, wearing the number one jersey. But, I mean, you know, Keegan Kahn, Jonathan Donville. And how about Owen Murphy, the transfer from Johns Hopkins, scored 4 goals in his Terrapin debut. I mean, this is a team that just rolls athletic. They roll deep. It'll be a terrific game Saturday at noon on Big Ten Network, Loyola, Maryland.
Did you settle on the fruit that you're bringing to the tailgate party?
I've been told that it's going to be fruit skewers. Oh. So I don't know what fruit will go on the skewer, but I do know that Friday tonight, there will be an assembly at the Dixon household. My wife has one of her friends coming over. They're going to assemble the fruit skewers. So while we have Hopkins Towson on LSN, the fruit will be assembled. I'll take a picture and we can share it with our listeners next week.
Just let me know what kind of wine to bring and maybe I can assist. I can come over and help out with the skewing.
Dan Flynn wants to, hey, let's go. I mean, what goes with fruit? Like a nice rosé?
Or a nice crisp white, maybe some Sauvignon Blanc, some Savvy B.
But no, my wife, I think it's Sauvignon Blanc, Kona. My wife is in Kona. Oh my God. Kona is like water in this house.
You have a keg of it? You have a keg of it?
Bring the box of Kona.
Okay. Will do. All right, Dix. The next game on Saturday features the number 12 Syracuse Orange and their new coaching staff playing against Holy Cross. The game's at 12:30. It will be available on the ACC network. Before we talk about the game, let's bring in our guest this week. You had a chance to sit down with Gary Gate, talk about his transition from the women's team to coaching the men's team, and some other great stories about Syracuse lacrosse. Let's get to that interview with Coach Gate.
This week on the D-Fly Dixie podcast, we are pleased to be joined by Syracuse men's head lacrosse coach, Gary Gate. Coach Gate, thanks for taking some time out of your schedule to stop by.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I mean, this is great to have you on before your first regular season game. You guys take on Holy Cross this weekend. Most folks know you over the last decade and a half of being the head women's lacrosse coach at Syracuse. You spent 14 years leading that program. What's the transition been like? It's a unique hire in and of itself in that a women's coach goes and coaches a men's team, but the fact that you're staying in the same program makes it even more unique. How's the transition been from program to program?
The transition's been great. You know, I don't think we've really missed a beat. You know, as far as what I do and what the job is, it's a very similar job. Just switching from the ladies to the men, that's the only real difference.
With respect to some folks will say, look, it's Gary Gate. If anybody can make a transition from one gender sport to the other, it's him. What challenges, if any, have you encountered or unique opportunities have you encountered moving from coaching the women to the men?
Well, I think the first thing is I think I do have some past experience coaching on the men's side. I've coached men professionally. I have 4 years of the old MLL, and then I got a couple years in the NLL, as well as about 10 years coaching international men's lacrosse. So it's not something new by any means. And I've spent some time coaching high school men as well. So I've done it. I've always tried to stay involved with men because I enjoy coaching men as well as women. So I always tried to keep up some experience, and anytime I had a chance to volunteer and help out on the men's side, I did that. So, you know, it makes it a little bit easier on this transition, you know, at this point to move from the ladies to the men. And, you know, the game, I've always said, it's been pretty simple. You know, lacrosse is very unique. It's about putting the ball in the back of the net and stopping your opponent from doing the same. And that's the basis of the game. But everywhere you play, there's a different set of rules. And it's just a matter of knowing the rule book. So, you know, that's the way I approach women's lacrosse after being a men's player. And, you know, switching back to the men, I'm just rereading the rule book and coaching the game of lacrosse again.
Pretty simple stuff when you break it down, right?
It really is. You know, it's, you know, the number of calls I received as a women's coach from men that were taking that on for the first time, I fielded, you know, 100 calls from guys that have played their game and switched to the women's side. And they've always asked me, like, how do I coach women? What's the difference? And I've always explained it the same way. It's just a game of lacrosse with a different set of rules.
Sure. You have your season opener against Holy Cross this coming weekend. We'll get to that in a minute. But the first question, Coach, I think a lot of people, it's burning on their minds. What will you wear on the sidelines? You've been known for being a pretty dapper dresser coaching the women's team. What can we expect on the side on this Saturday?
You'll see me probably in a suit or a jacket and a tie. You know, I started wearing a suit, you know, because I was coaching professionally when I left the Colorado Mammoth to take the Syracuse women's job. I was wearing a suit because that was protocol and dress code for the National Lacrosse League. So I had no problem, you know, representing and doing the same for the, you know, women's lacrosse team in Syracuse, and feel that, you know, I was happy to do the same for the men's program. You know, just about, you know, looking sharp and respecting the game. That's really the only reason I do it.
Absolutely. You're someone who arrived with your brother Paul at Syracuse in 1987, and you've had the opportunity to spend most of your adult life, not only in Syracuse, but still associated in coaching for the university. What does that mean to you and your family, being able to be such a huge part of the fabric of not only Syracuse lacrosse, but Syracuse University?
You know, I'll be honest, I didn't think I'd ever be back in Syracuse. You know, I finished up at Cuse and I moved down to Baltimore, Maryland, and I was coaching at the University of Maryland, playing professionally, doing all that. And I enjoyed, you know, the mid-Atlantic area. And then I had an opportunity to move to Denver. And again, you know, coaching the Colorado Mammoth and working for the Cronky Sports was awesome. But, you know, it really came down to the fact that Syracuse is really just an incredible place, very down to earth for raising a family. And I thought it was a great place for my kids to go through middle school and high school. You know, I'd only spent my college days in Syracuse before that. I didn't really know the town, the city, or anything like that, but I knew the people. And the people were very genuine, down to earth. And I just thought, you know what, if I'm going to do something, this would be a great opportunity to go back to Syracuse, raise my kids, keep them down to earth. And, you know, it was, and I really, truly enjoyed raising my family there. So it's, you know, Cuse to me is about family, and it's about tradition, and, you know, to come back and join the men's lacrosse tradition is an amazing honor. And I don't take it lightly, and I'm making sure that I'm doing everything possible to give everything I can to the program.
Along those lines, one of the mainstays of Syracuse University, Syracuse Lacrosse, is the Carrier Dome. And you mentioned it in your, when you were hired as the men's coach. You talked about it when you were the women's coach, how special it is to play. How would you best describe what the dome means to Syracuse Lacrosse and what it's like to play in there and have that fan support?
Well, this week we've been able to be in the dome practicing. Typically we're in our practice facility, which the field is a replica of the dome. And, you know, but to get back in there this week just reminded, you know, me and all the players how unique the dome really is, just to have that facility. And I know even Coach Petrobolo is like, I love the dome now. He's like, it really is an amazing facility to play lacrosse, you know, to have somewhere where you can get, you know, 5, 10, 15,000 fans to watch lacrosse in perfect weather. And it, you know, it's the loud house, you know, the fans, when they cheer, it's, you know, with the enclosed stadium, it makes it loud and it makes it a great place to play home games. And it really does feel like home.
I'll never forget my freshman year playing for Johns Hopkins, going to the dome. You know, it's a distraction for the team that comes into practice for the first 10 or 15 minutes because we're in such awe. It's such a great place. And then guys spend an inordinate amount of time trying to throw the ball from the field up to the top of the dome and hit the roof. So Coach Seaman was not happy with our focus. And another quick story I could tell you, Gary, is, you know, you have to get used to those air pressure doors, meaning when you walk through a set of doors, you have to shut the door behind you. Everyone has to be set, open the door to go into the next area of the dome. Our ball boy was a gentleman by the name of Georgie Poehler. Georgie was in his 80s, I believe, at the time, and didn't pay attention to the to that rule and lost a finger at the dome. Didn't really even bat an eye.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He walked onto the field, and our defensive coordinator, John Hawes, Georgie just said, "Hey, Coach Hawes," and just held up his hand. I don't mean to laugh, but it was one of those things where Georgie, you know, no pain, no gain. And, you know, but as a broadcaster, love the dome. As a player, it's a really, really unique place. As far as your coaching staff, and one of the themes has been.
Let me interrupt you.
Oh, please.
Because the dome's been remodeled.
Mm-hmm.
And it's itself, so it's not held up. Really hard to get. You no longer have to worry if open or close or airlocks or anything like that. So it's a little bit different experience now. So we've gotten rid of the whole antiquated, you know, dome roof held up by air. So it has been modernized. The new roof is beautiful, and the lighting's improved. And you can't throw the ball to the top anymore because there's a giant jumbotron in the middle that hangs down. So those days are gone as well. So it's been remodeled. You know, the university's invested some money, and it's even nicer now than it was before. So,
oh, that is fantastic. I haven't been there since it's been remodeled, and I can imagine there isn't going to be anybody throwing the daggone ball at the jumbotron. Nobody wants that.
No, you're an awful lot of trouble.
For sure. Again, you play Holy Cross this weekend. Not to skip ahead, but did want to mention something special taking place in the dome. Your game against the University of Maryland the following weekend, there's some pretty special things going on. And I was wondering if you could run through some of those things that are in conjunction with the Maryland game.
Well, it's going to be a great day. We're Legends Day for Syracuse Lacrosse. And Syracuse Lacrosse, we've kind of branded as men's and women's lacrosse, unified, working together. And we have a doubleheader with the women. The women will be playing Stony Brook. We're playing Maryland. With the exception of us, the other three teams are all in the top five for respectively in the rankings. So <Wow. laughs> it'll be interesting. So it'll be a great day of lacrosse. They're retiring one of our all-time great on the women's side, Katie Rowan's jersey, go up in the rafters. They're going to actually retire my jersey as well. That'll be awesome. I got lots of family and friends coming in. And then the real exciting part is to watch Roy Simmons Jr., my old coach, have his name go up in the Ring of Honor, which is, you know, kind of the highest recognition you get in athletics at Syracuse, joining the likes of Floyd Little, Jim Brown, Jim Boeheim, and, you know, some of the greats. And we're thrilled to have Coach Simmons back and honor him. So it's going to be a great day of lacrosse, and I recommend that if you can make it out to the Dome, get there. It's going to be fun.
Sounds like a fantastic event. And some of the people that I've become friends with over the years, Syracuse lacrosse alums, Rick Beardsley, Paul Carcaterra, they can't say enough about Roy Simmons Jr. How would you best characterize the impact that Coach has had on your life?
You know, they talk about, you know, some of the things that I've been involved in, you know, trying to change the game and change. He was a game changer for me. You know, he provided, you know, the leadership, and it was a different experience than a normal coach, I think, would give. It was so much more about developing young men and providing unique experiences, from the trips to the art museums, to the international trips, to, you know, having opportunities to really meet alums. And it was, you know, he truly became a friend and a mentor and a coach. So, you know, I can't thank him enough, and you know, to have him go up in the Ring of Honor, it's just a small token of, I think, what Syracuse can do for him. He's done so much for so many.
Absolutely. When you were hired as a coach, you hired Dave Petromala as your defensive coordinator. You also have Pat March, a holdover from the previous staff. And the, you know, I don't want to call it a joke, but the line was, oh my God, who's not going to want to play for Syracuse when Gary Gate and Dave Petromala walk into their living room or have a Zoom with them or visit them on campus? What was recruiting like with the 1-2 punch of Gary Gate and Dave Petromala this past fall?
It was a lot of fun. You know, we also added TD Erlin, one of the best faceoff guys in the world right now. So, you know, that's, I'm thrilled with the staff. They've been working incredibly hard, and when we hit the recruiting trail, you know, I don't think there's anybody better than Pat for knowing the talent that's out in the high school age group and the clubs, you know, the club area of lacrosse. So, you know, Dave and I went on the road a few times, brought kids in, and you know, it was just a great opportunity to meet young lacrosse players and share our experiences and let them know what we're trying to do at Syracuse. So it was a lot of fun, and I believe we had some pretty good success. So, you know, we'll continue that on into the future.
You know, obviously people know Dave Petromala, incredible player, 2-time national champion coach at Johns Hopkins University, but lost in the shadows, if you will, might be Pat March, someone who is viewed as very much a rising star on the offensive end of the field in the college game. What do people need to know about Pat in addition to what you just said about him?
I don't think there's anybody that lives the game of lacrosse more than Pat March. Like, he watches every single lacrosse game that he can find on the internet, on television, YouTube, you name it. You know, I think he's watched every NLL game, every pro game. He just loves lacrosse, and he's an expert at, you know, knowing the players and knowing, you know, the teams that have success. So he's a real student of the game, and I've been pleasantly surprised at how knowledgeable he is and how good of a coach he is. You know, he's very concise, strategic, and he knows how to make adjustments. So it's been awesome to have him on the staff with Dave and myself.
And TD. Terrific. Looking at your team for 2022, Coach Gate, again, you open up with the Holy Cross Crusaders at the Dome this weekend. How's the preseason been? What have you been most impressed with? And, you know, without giving too much away, what are some of the areas of development that you've been working with the guys?
Well, you know, we're just trying to create chemistry. You know, I think we're a different team than the Syracuse of old. You know, I think we'll get back there in the next couple of years. But, you know, as far as superstars and talent, you know, if you ask the predictors, we're not very deep. We're not very strong, according to, you know, the experts out there. So we're not going to be, you know, my dream is to have, bring back a flashy style where players are thrown behind the back. You're not going to see that this year. You know, I don't think we have that type of player in Syracuse today. But so what we're focusing on is team lacrosse, top to bottom. Everybody does their role. Everybody, you know, relies on each other, and we work together as a team to have success. And I think, you know, so far it's been a little ups and downs in the preseason, but hopefully we'll be dialed in and ready to go.
Bringing in a new staff and working with these players, who are some of the leaders that you're leaning on for guidance and to incorporate what you want and the other coaches want?
We got our core of captains in Brett Kennedy, Tucker Dordovic, Owen Siebel, and Brendan Curry. And you know, they bring tremendous experience and leadership, and we're expecting, I believe they're all fifth-year seniors, and we're expecting big things out of them. And they're really bought into the team concepts that we're throwing at them. And now it's just a matter of continuing to work tremendously hard to get better, make better decisions, and limit our mistakes. So that's kind of the core of the leadership group that we'll be looking at.
Perfect, perfect. One more for you, Coach, and then I'll let you go. Are you more of a music guy or a TV/movie guy?
Not really a movie guy. I like all music. You know, I don't have a favorite genre or anything like that. You know, I just like it as background music. I just like to stay busy. That's my thing. And I love to build things. Anybody that knows me, I'm always making something, designing lacrosse sticks, doing something. So I spend more time doing that than I would say I ever do listening to music or watching TV. So it's better for me to stay busy and be creative.
Understood. If you are stringing sticks, and you do happen to put music on in the background, just curious, what might it be? Any go-tos or anything of that nature?
You know, the funny thing is I've been keep hitting the same thing on my phone. For some weird reason, Post Malone keeps coming up. I don't know why.
That's great. That's great. Rockstar. I think Rockstar might be my favorite Post Malone song.
He's got a lot that you recognize for sure.
Excellent. Coach, we can't thank you enough for joining the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. 12:30 this Saturday, Syracuse versus Holy Cross. If you can't get to the Dome, the game will be on the ACC network. Coach, thanks again for joining us, and best of luck this season.
Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate it. And we'll hopefully talk to you down the road.
I love the story you told about Georgie Poehler. There was a little bit of hearing Gary's audio was messed up a little bit up from his phone when he was telling you about how some of the changes have been made to the Dome. But that story, just for anyone who knows Georgie, that's a great story. Great story.
it's unforgettable. And you know, when I was at Hopkins, then post Hopkins, I actually worked with his niece at T. Rowe Price after niece or cousin. I can't remember what she was relation-wise to Georgie, but what a character.
Probably not his cousin.
When you would say, well, you never know. Big family That's trees, true. You know. The lady I worked with no spring chick either. So when you talk about a ball boy, what do you imagine? I mean, you imagine
like a coach's son or like, yeah. You know, it's an 8-year-old boy or something. Yeah.
And out rolls Georgie, you know, late 70s, early 80s, you know, with the hat, and the windbreak, with the wind pants and, you know, oftentimes a cigar. He was great. He was terrific. But I'll never forget. I don't mean to laugh, but when he lost, I think it was his thumb. When he lost that thumb, we get through the door and he goes to Hawsey and he's like, Coach Hawes. And he just holds up the bloody stump or whatever. Hawsey's like, you know, Coach Hawes was as easygoing as they came. He was like, oh my God, oh my God, we got to get you, you know? So that was wild, but no, the Dome is a special place. I never hated it. I never hated the Dome. I may have disliked fans, disliked the team we were playing, but I've never hated the Dome. Great fan base, live, great sight lines, bright, energetic, terrific place to watch college lacrosse. And always great to talk to Coach Gate. I mean, he's always just so easygoing. He really is a very tranquil guy. That will, you know, give you all the time you need. And, you know, you almost have to catch yourself and be like, I'm talking to like the greatest player that's ever played this sport. And he's just so humble and so easy to talk to.
No doubt. And he probably is the greatest player ever to play the sport, the greatest superstar the sport has seen. And you know, and it's happened in our lifetime. But he's also so easygoing. I have this great Gary Gates story that I love to tell. I probably told this to you before, but they used to have these media sessions at the Lacrosse Hall of Fame. U.S. Lacrosse used to host them 20, 25 years ago. And this is when it was still on the Hopkins campus. So it's now headquartered in Sparks, Maryland, up, you know, in Hunt Valley area. But it used to be right on the Hopkins campus. And a lot of people probably remember that. We used to walk over when I worked at Hopkins, and they'd bring together, you know, once a week or something, all the Division I men's and women's programs, and they'd have a big media session, but all the media people and coaches, and they would have a session and serve lunch and press conference kind of thing. Well, one time I'm standing there, I think I'm talking to like Tom Calder, who was the athletic director at Hopkins at the time. And I'm looking at the Air Gate statue. It's mm-hmm. right there in the Hall of Fame Museum. And it's a beautiful, huge statue. And I look across it, and they're leaning on the statue, eating a sandwich, is Gary Gate himself, the man in the statue, who at the time was probably, I think he was the assistant women's coach at University of Maryland. He was there for the press conference. But I'm just thinking, if I'm in Canton or if I'm in Cooperstown, I don't look across the Babe Ruth statue and see Babe Ruth eating a sandwich or probably a hot dog, actually, probably what Babe Ruth's behind. But I just thought, like, wow, what a surreal moment to be. And it brought home a couple things. One, how unique and, you know, close the lacrosse community is.
Accessible.
That this could even happen. And second, what an easygoing guy Gary Gate is. You know, just yeah. like the superstar of superstars. And he's just the approachable, regular guy. You know, who's eating a sandwich, leaning against his own statue.
That is a neat story. I thought you were going to say you looked across and it was Ted Moon leaning on the statue, eating a sandwich.
He was probably like two statues over.
Right.
Yeah. You know, behind some other one. Yeah. I love that story, man.
I love the part in the interview where I'm like, you know, yes, people are saying it could be a challenge from you going from the women's game to the men's game. And at the collegiate level, that is true. But he's like, well, you know, I have coached some men's teams in the past. And he takes off. Like, you know.
Yeah. And he lists them, and it's not a problem. But what my favorite part of that whole, like what he was getting at is it's just lacrosse.
Right.
I'm just coaching lacrosse. There's just some different rules.
Right.
And that was when you think of like at such a high level and probably the way he sees the game, it's just, you know, pitching and catching, you know, it's blocking and tackling, it's playing lacrosse. And it's just, the rules are a little bit different, but it's the same game. And when you think of it that way, you're like, of course he's going to be good at this.
Right.
So let's talk about his game a little bit. Holy Cross, this is J.L. Ruppert's second year at the helm of the Crusaders, and they'll travel into the Dome. And it's our first time to see the Syracuse team and how they'll play.
So Providence bested Holy Cross last weekend, 16-9. I think that this time last year, correct me if I'm wrong, but this was J.L. Ruppert's first career game as a head coach going to the Dome. So he's got that year under his belt. You know, he probably won't be as wide-eyed. His kids aren't going to be as wide-eyed going into the Carrier Dome. Against the Syracuse team, we heard Coach Gates say it. Look, we're a good bunch. We got some good leaders. But we're not, you know, the team that I want to have a few years down the road in terms of being able to go up and down the field and behind the back and playing with a lot of flair. They're also dealing with a number of injuries, namely Owen Hiltz, the gifted sophomore attackman that had such a great freshman campaign. But, I mean, look, you want to talk about guys who've been around forever, you know, Brendan Curry and Tucker Gordovic and, you know, players of that ilk are back. New goalie after Drake Porter has graduated. And got to give a shout out to Drake Porter. He is the goalie coach now at Loyola Blakefield High School, where my son Owen is playing. And Owen said he's just doing a terrific job. So hats off to Drake Porter. But this will be a fun game. An interesting game, the first game in the Gate era as head coach at Syracuse.
And our last game on Saturday, I want to talk about this. This has been a great in-state rivalry for many years. Villanova will travel to Penn State for a game at 3:00. And these teams have really gotten after it in the past few years.
All signs, too, are pointing to this game being played outdoors, which means it would be streamed by BTN Plus. I know it sucks, everybody, but hey, the game will be streamed, right? Oh, my goodness. I'm still riled up. In any event, this is a Villanova team that returns Matt Campbell. He's a very talented midfielder, I think third-team All-American last year, but he's joined by a number of transfers that could have an impact. Brett Baskin comes over from Johns Hopkins. You've got Luke Keating, All-American from Franklin and Marshall, and our friend Todd Cavallaro. So, you know, Villanova has been a very proficient offensive team the last few years. I think they keep that identity in 2022, playing against a Penn State team that outlasted Lafayette last weekend, 20-15, with a lot of new faces on the offensive end. You know, Penn State, no surprise they scored 20 goals, but giving up 15 to Lafayette. I think Terry Foy mentioned it in his tailgate podcast this past earlier this week about, you know, the Penn State defense. Just, I mean, Penn State, they've got a lot of guys back on that defensive end, you know, new starting goalie in Alaric Fayok, a huge fan of Alaric, great guy, coaches with the Crabs over the summer. He had to give way, struggled a little bit. But, you know, Braden Peck's back on the defense and, you know, so Villanova with Penn State not being able to have any tape on Villanova since it's their first game, that could be a challenge for the Nittany Lions.
Moving on to Sunday's games, there's four games on the schedule, two that I want to talk about. The first one is a top 20 matchup. Again, the number 19 Johns Hopkins Blue Jays have already played two games. This will be the home opener and the season opener for number 4 Georgetown, and that game's at 1:00.
Yeah, you know, season opener for the Hoyas. And again, we talked about it last week, but Will Bowen, Gibson Smith, potential first-team All-Americans on defense. And, oh, by the way, one of their favorite players is James Donaldson, who's the third guy. Owen McElroy, first-team All-American goaltender. You know, they're buttoned up as well as anyone defensively in the nation. And they're going to be playing a Johns Hopkins team that, you know, they're going to have a stiff test on Friday night on the road against Towson. Here's the deal, though. The weather in the Baltimore, D.C. area – supposed to be in like the low to mid 50s Friday and Saturday. Obviously, it would be cooler than that when the Jays and the Tigers face off on Friday evening. Sunday, though, it's supposed to be a high of like 33, 35.
It's supposed to get very cold on Sunday.
Right. So really, really cold day in DC at Cooper Field. I'm excited for this one. Only the fourth time all time that the Hoyas and the Jays have tangled. Hopkins has a 3-0 lead in that series. I played in the very first one, 1993, when we played a midweek game. Georgetown came to Homewood Field, and we tangled with the Hoyas. And that was a good game. That was a tight game. This game will be broadcast. I think it's on go to the Hoyas, go to the Hoyas website. Big East Digital or something.
Yeah, it's I'm going to have to figure out how I can watch this. What is the advantage, Georgetown's highly rated, and we talked about how the talent they have coming back, and they would be the favorites in this game. But what is the advantage of having a couple games under your belt versus a team that's getting out there for the first time?
I think you have a feel for what has worked and what hasn't, and you've played at game speed. Obviously Georgetown's had a number of scrimmages, but scrimmage to game where it really counts is a little different. And so Hopkins will have that game speed twice under their belt. In the real competition, they'll have units that have worked together. Okay, these guys mesh. Maybe this guy could help out this group. Here's where we're struggling. Here's where we really have a plus. So it's just those that real game action that they have under their belt. They also have, they could have guys banged up a little bit more than a team that hasn't played a game yet. So I think there's advantages and there's disadvantages.
The last game of the weekend, I want to talk about, Dix, the number one Virginia Cavaliers will welcome High Point at 3:00 on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, and Virginia, they fell behind 3-0 to Air Force this past weekend and after the first quarter, and then they just, blew up for 10 goals. You want to talk about firepower. I mean, this Virginia team has it. One player that I think has been a real pleasant surprise for them, Noah Chismar, freshman out of St. Paul's School, played crabs with my son, Matt, just a great kid and a really, really hard worker. He's making a difference as short stick D middie, giving them some depth at that position. But you got a team loaded, Schellenberger and Moore and Cormier, just go down the list, Xander Dixon. This Virginia team is very, very tough. High Point last weekend, Asher Nolting, I think, finished with 5 or 6 assists. Maryland did a nice job of limiting his production, if you will, but they still, were able to put up 13 goals. Terrific performance by their goaltender. I can't remember, he was around the 20s in saves. And remember, High Point beat Virginia a couple of years ago at Kloeckner. I think that was a midweek game or a weekday game. But it's a High Point team that's had success against the Cavaliers in the past. And don't think John Torpy's not talking that up in the locker room.
Yeah, High Point at this point, they're not afraid to play anybody.
No.
They will be ready for this game. And it should be a good one on Sunday afternoon at 3:00. All right, Dix, it's time for the Give and Go segment. I want to talk more about the Winter Olympics. I know you're a huge fan after last week's discussion. On Wednesday night, the U.S. won a couple of gold medals. Nathan Chen in figure skating and Chloe Kim in the half pipe snowboarding competition. So we're on the board in the gold medals, which was nice to see. But after watching for a week or so, what are some of your favorite events that you've seen? And I even forgot about some of the ones that I liked. And I'm looking forward to seeing a couple other ones.
I'm still not a huge Olympic fan, but the luge has been neat. The luge is cool. That reminds me of when we were kids and we would go behind a buddy of mine's house that had a nice hill and he had to dodge trees. And we would take buckets of water and freeze it up when the sun went down and create a track. And we would ride our sleds. The radio flyer sled? Was that what they were called?
Yeah.
Instead of riding it front ways facing forward, we would get on it laying down and we would use the steering thing with our feet to kind of do a luge thing. We weren't going nearly as fast, nor were we as successful as the folks in the Olympics, but the luge is cool. I was watching the other one. I don't know what you call it. Is it the mogul skiing? where you just go down and it's just like, I mean, you're like, you know, bumps. Like it's like your knees are just shock absorbers.
Yeah.
And then you do the little, and you have the ramp at the end where you do the flip or whatever they do in the air. So those are two that have caught my eye.
Yeah. We've talked about how we don't like anything that's really judged.
Right.
Where there's someone who has to rate what you do. And I'm not really into those competitions either, but I think we're on the same page. And what you're sounding like is I like all the ones that are like speed.
Yeah.
Like high speed. So the luge, bobsled, speed skating, the downhill skiing, where it's just so fast.
That downhill skiing. Holy crap. That's like they're going down just like an iceberg. You know, that's crazy stuff. And you say like speed, but it's also like you're just an inch away from disaster, you know, and it's compelling.
Yes, I totally agree. And the ones that I've been watching were, and I've been on TV quite a bit, that I just flip past them is, I watched some of the biathlon.
Not in
cross-country skiing with shooting.
Yeah.
You're like, this isn't something that people should be winning gold medals for.
I dig the shooting part though, because cross-country skiing, like I was saying last week, so I was listening to a portion of the podcast with my wife last week as we were driving to dinner. I got to, you know, my wife is used to do triathlons, but since she's had knee surgery, now she just does duathlons. Huge into biking, loves biking. And the part where I was like, oh, you know, when you're talking about Tour de France, I'm like, cycling looks easy. She was just like, she was ready to kick me out of the car. Similar here. You're like, what's the big deal? You're skiing and then you stop. I mean, it takes a lot out of you. So like your heart rate is up, your nerve, you know, you got to be like really steady and really focused, but like to do it's probably really cool, but to watch it is not very riveting.
I'm not saying it doesn't require a great deal of skill. And I do like the
break. Oh, sure.
Because cross-country skiing itself is just kind of, I mean, it was just so slow and boring. It's like watching someone, you know, run a marathon. Like, it's just, you know, it's not compelling TV for
no
the whole race. But it's just silly. Like, I understand, like, 150 years ago or 100 years ago, people had to ski and shoot their meal. Carry it home, and that, you know, we didn't have proper transportation or snowmobiles and things like that. But it's just silly. Like, why shooting? Why isn't it like you stop and play a game of billiards or some other
stop and drink a beer?
Silly thing that you of skill, play darts that you have to do, and then get back and ski some more. So any of the like the slower events that's long distance, it's just not as compelling to me. And then I know everyone is. We're supposed to like curling because it's unique. And I tried to watch some curling and get into it, and I couldn't. It's like, I know they're the best in the world, and I always appreciate watching the best in the world do anything.
Right.
If hanging pictures in an office and you're the best in the world, I'd spend a minute to watch that YouTube video or something like that. But these people don't seem like athletes to me. And I don't know what they're doing. And I couldn't watch it. And can't do it. Sorry.
Maybe for like 5 minutes tops, but getting into a full, what do they even call it? Like, are they called matches or whatever? But no, I'm not a curling guy either.
Try explaining what's happening in curling to a 6 and an 8 year old. And you realize how silly it is.
Oh, you're probably ready to jump out of a window.
Yeah.
After that.
Like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what they're doing.
Like shuffleboard is an awesome game. The one where you have the little metal discs and you throw it along the wood with the sawdust and all that. Could you imagine, like, basically curling is shuffleboard on ice, except you get people like to chip away the ice that's in front of it, stuff like that. Like, just roll it. I think it might be a little bit more compelling, actually, if you just roll the stones and just let it see what happens. If something does catch a lip of ice and gets redirected, then so be it.
Yeah, it's just... You're supposed to be the person who can push it perfectly, and yet you can't. You know,
right.
you need someone to help steer it. Like, what's going on there? And that, my friend, is a good place to stop. We'd like to thank our guest this week, Syracuse Orange head men's lacrosse coach Gary Gate. Thanks for coming on, Coach. You're welcome here anytime. Best of luck to him and the Orange as they lift the lid on a new season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. If you're interested in advertising on this podcast or others at Inside Lacrosse, send me a DM or email. They're affordable. We reach a wide swath of dedicated lacrosse fans every week. Dix, have you had a chance to listen to any of the other Inside Lacrosse podcasts?
I did. I listened to The Tailgate this past Monday. It's Terry and Nick Ocello is his new co-host. I thought it was nice. I actually commended Terry. You know, I texted with Terry and was like, hey, nice job. It was a good listen. And he was actually like, hey, thanks. I appreciate it. Like, what'd you like about it? And I was like, well, you know, it was just, you guys seemed to mesh well together. And then the Nick Ocello gave the points about Military Academy long poles. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it or not.
I did.
But I thought it was like really good insight, something that I never would have really thought of, nor have I really discussed. So I learned something from the podcast, you know, so it was great. I took it, you know, I like to go walking. I'll do 4 or 5 miles at a time. So I just downloaded it, popped it in, and it was a good listen.
Yeah. So welcome to the family, Nick. But on Wednesday, there's a new podcast with Matt Bocklet and Pete Poyon. Very good.
Oh, is
the
it?
Midweek podcast.
I missed
that one.
The first
one came out just on Wednesday, and it's really good. They're going to, not only do they have a good chemistry and it's fun to hear those two guys talk, but they're going to bring in interviews each week throughout the season of people and highlight individuals and people throughout the sport, whether it's coaches or players or men's and women's, but that you tell their stories of people who may not otherwise have a platform for you to know about. So I really enjoyed listening to that the other day. So give a shout out to the new podcast season and the schedule. The Tailgate will come out on Mondays, and this new Pete Poyon, Matt Bocklet, unnamed yet. So new.
They oh, no name. Name okay. Yet.
They're working on it. And then
I'm going to, I don't know how listen. I missed that. I'm going to download it right now. Listen to it today.
Yeah. And then you can listen to us on Friday mornings. Dixon, I love to hear from you. So give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse and I'm simply at DFly at D_FLY. Remember, stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games.